Sometimes we do have to look back to get our bearings, especially at shaky political moments. That was the case during the 1930s, soon after the market crashed in 1929.
It's widely seen, even at the time, as the greatest crisis America has experienced since the Civil War.
Thomas Dougherty, author of Projections of War, says that generation went back to the Civil War for sustenance and reassurance.
And the figure we turn to imaginatively is Abraham Lincoln. And he's almost this secular saint figure we turn to during the Great Depression. There's something about that Lincoln character that's above us and transcendent. At the same time, he's deeply one of us.
To hold on to his greatness, people of the time kept making things about Lincoln, quoting Lincoln, dramatizing Lincoln's life. Young Mr. Lincoln, for example, John Ford's 1939 biopic. It was one of five major Hollywood films on Lincoln in that era, and it used the Lincoln character to explore the American ideal.
They're gonna lynch him, Abe. They're gonna lynch him.
Henry Fonda's Abraham Lincoln famously quells a lynch mob, not by overpowering them, but by persuading the mob that they are being irrational, and that is good, decent Americans. They cannot do this.
There's Lincoln now.
Trouble is, when men start taking the law into their own hands, then the next thing you know, they're hanging one another just for fun.
These considerations of democracy and ideas, and Lincoln himself as the admirable exponent of those ideas, how did all that start at the time?
In the time of the April lilacs in the year 1865, on his death, the casket with his...
Some give credit for the Lincoln revival in the 30s to the Chicago writer and poet Carl Sandburg, who had something bordering on a Lincoln obsession. Sandburg finished his first multi-volume Lincoln biography in the 20s, and yet another set of Lincoln books a decade later, six volumes in all.
Sandburg has this faith in the ability of the people to move and gather, organize collectively.
Social historian John Bodner.
And he's writing about Lincoln, and he's honoring Lincoln and celebrating Lincoln and selling a significant amount of books about Lincoln. His emergence as a Democratic hero is not happening totally by accident. There are people who are promoting Lincoln.
The Lincoln Memorial had gone up in the early 20s, 1922. Very soon, that monument itself became an important part of Lincoln memory.
Let's go see old Abe, sitting in the marble in the moonlight, sitting lonely in the marble in the moonlight.
Not long after it was built, Langston Hughes devoted a short poem to it, which he recorded years later.
Quiet for 10,000 centuries now, old Abe. Quiet for a million, million years. Quiet. And yet a voice forever against the timeless walls of time. Old Abe.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, day after tomorrow, we celebrate the birthday of the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln.
Radio, of course, got into the act.
You'll hear a great deal about him in the next day or two, but tonight we should like to remind you of the simple human side of this character.
But when you get to Lincoln advocate Robert Sherwood, then you're in a new category of Lincolniana. Sherwood, a less remembered member of the original Algonquin Roundtable, won four Pulitzer Prizes in his playwriting life. One of them was for his Broadway hit, Abe Lincoln in Illinois, produced in 1938. After more than a year's run at the Plymouth Theater, the play became a movie. It was not your average biopic. Again, it was a way of working things out.
Mr. Lincoln harps constantly on this subject of equality. He repeats over and over.
Abe Lincoln in Illinois has an extended argument, a reenactment of the Lincoln-Douglas debates, which talk about these constitutional issues in really eloquent, articulate terms.
This country with its institutions belongs to the people who inhabit it.
And the screen space given to that would be unimaginable in a film today.
They can exercise their constitutional rights.
And John Bodner says, what happened to playwright Sherwood is bigger than Broadway, bigger than Hollywood. He was taken on by FDR, the New Deal president at the time.
Roosevelt hires Sherwood as a speechwriter because he wants to get that sort of democratic language and rhetoric into his own speeches.
It's an unusual pairing of a playwright and a president who are sort of in it together.
So I think that's part of this connection between culture and politics that's helping to push the legend of Lincoln forward.
Composer Aaron Copland didn't hurt either, as the thread continued into the 40s. Copland had been commissioned to write a piece about an eminent American during World War II. And so there he was, digging around in Lincoln's speeches and letters for words to use in his piece, Lincoln Portrait.
Lincoln was a quiet man. Abe Lincoln was a quiet and...
Copland knew any composer would have to struggle to measure up to Lincoln's stature. But he thought by using Lincoln's own words, he could get by.
As I would not be a slave, so I would not be a master. This expresses my idea of democracy.
With the voice of Lincoln to help me, he wrote, I was ready to risk the impossible. On radio, a year or two later, was a production of Earl Robinson's The Lonesome Train. A choral piece picturing Lincoln's funeral train traveling across the country. After all, the Lincoln myth was about his death as well as his life. It wasn't just people going back in time to search for an icon.
They were also going back to find something of value in the American past because the presumption was that modern society had failed us.
Ain't you going back, Abe?
No, I think I might go on a piece. Maybe to the top of that hill.
This sort of thing might not work with most presidents.
Where Lincoln, you could really see yourself sitting across a table and having a conversation with and being charmed by his common touch, but also in awe of his greatness. And I always think of the last shot of young Mr. Lincoln where, you know, the figure is alone looking off into the horizon for what will be the Civil War and what we know will be his martyrdom.
When you can't see what's ahead, back is where you're inclined to look. So we look back to a struggling generation, looking back to Lincoln. For Fishko Files, I'm Sarah Fishko.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.